There we go.
Okay.
Welcome to July, everybody. Thank you very much for joining. Oh, hang on, it's the 4th of July. I don't know if that means anything to
Yeah,
anyone.
to Americans,
Yeah, absolutely.
yeah.
So happy 4th of July for those that it matters to. Welcome to today's conversation, which will be around karma. Momentarily, I will be popping the link to Peter's most recent article in the chat so that you are able to have a look at that in your own time. If you have not already had a good read of that, I certainly have. Just popping that in the chat now. There we go. And just before Peter gets going with his topic of karma, as always, please do pop your questions in the chat. So I've not had any submitted to me thus far, so I don't think any of you have put any in. Other things to let you know about, we will not be having a Q&A next month. August is the month where Peter has a little break and gives you a break from the Q&As. So just to remind you that there will be no Q&A in August. However, on the 2nd of August, there will be the Magical Membership workshop, which is all about Klippos. And this is certainly one that I am interested in, and I will be there with bells on. Maybe no bells, I don't know. Peter, can you tell everyone what you're going to be talking about with regards to the Klippos, why they should come?
Understanding the kind of roots of the dark side of the tree of life, the forces of war, chaos. Quite often, the Cabalas like to put things into light and dark, and people actually then don't look at the dark side of themselves, which is not really about evil, it's about pure war, chaos. Naturally, when you want to put things in order, it's all there's ever about ordered energy. But when everything's in order, you're not actually finding your true potential. You say it's understanding the balance of order and chaos to find power that can change anything. So it's about taking the path deeper by understanding the darker side of the tree of life, the cliff off, what these raw chaotic forces can actually do for you when you use them properly.
So those of you who are magical members, this is obviously inclusive in your membership, but those of you who are not, but you would like to join anyway, I've popped the link in the chat, so you're very welcome to join as a one-off workshop should you choose to do so. And of course, Peter has his in-person workshops. There will be the medicine retreat occurring in August in Peru, his point holding happening in Thailand in September, as well as an in-person dragon magic happening in September. So thank you very much for listening to me. I'm now going to spotlight Peter. And then I will put myself on mute. Peter, please do take it away with regards to karma, the truth about what it is.
Okay, well, hopefully you've read my article to give you some idea what we're talking about. And it's not what people usually think, that it's some system of reward and punishment and for being good or bad. It's nothing like that. Let's try and look at what it really means. Now, when you try and look at the word karma, people often translate it as action. But actually, when you look at the Sanskrit, the word for action is actually kri. There isn't actually any exact translation for karma, which makes any sense. The closest I can find is actually the only action it refers to is planting seeds. Now, this is very significant if you look at that. What you're doing is planting seeds in your consciousness. Your actions, your thoughts, your emotional reactions to things, and the beliefs you form, and then the laws and the choices, so on. These are the seeds you're planting in your unconscious, which then become your reality. So, this is what karma really is. It's the seeds you're planting that are going to start to shape your reality. But in the Sanskrit, they're divided into three types. First, Sanchitta karma, as they call it, which is the long-term karma from all your lifetimes, all your accumulated thoughts. All the backlog of stuff that can be part of reality. Then they have what they call the Prarabdha karma, which is about what's applying in this life. Which of these seeds you planted are becoming ripe in this life and affecting your reality? And obviously, this is what people are concerned with. How do you deal with all the crap happening in this life and change it? And then the final one was called Agami karma, which is about the thoughts you're planting now and the future they're going to create. So these are the different stages we're looking at. But basically, what you're looking at is simply the seeds you plant, how they're affecting your consciousness, how they're affecting your reality, in other words, because your consciousness is then shaping your whole future and everything around you. Everything's created by consciousness. The trouble is, and people don't understand this, karma simply becomes a word they use to explain anything that doesn't really explain it at all. What's the problem? People say, oh, it's my karma. Well, what does that mean? Everything is a karma. Everything's your creation because you create all the thoughts you planted. But people often use this as a cop-out. Oh, it's my karma. They're not actually doing anything about it. So what we need to do is actually look at how we are creating our reality. And this is a wide subject when you look at it. It's not one simple thing. That's what we've been talking about, all the different forms of how we create beliefs, how our choices affect us, all the samskaras you create out with the karmic web and set up into patterns. And there's a lot to deal with it when you look at it. But that's karma. It's the whole thing, all the seeds we plant which are affecting our reality. So having said that, I want to go over the questions now because I'm sure you've got lots of questions and hopefully you've read my article and got other questions about it and how it applies to you.
Thank you very much. So, first question is from me. So, I've read your article, and it says here that the shamanic toolkit for karma healing is there's some of the things that you have been talking about is ancestral line healing, karmic contract dissolution. How do you know how to do those things? Like, I know how to do soul retrieval, and I know how to do body electronics, obviously. But what about the others? How on earth does one go about doing
The contract
those?
dissolving, we have talked about in some of the basic healing courses. You might not have done the right one, but basically, once you recognize a contract, you just undo it, you burn it, as you would an old contract. Once you see how it formed, you might see it in words.
Okay.
Like void, of course, it tear it up, burn it, all those things. So actually learn, sometimes you have to kind of negotiate over it first, like with a lawyer. It's like, do you have the right to perform this, to release this contract? Because the thing about contracts, people see them as binding. How do you get by that? Quite often there's a bit of convincing going on, as if you were talking to your lawyer. How can we get rid of this? Is it unfair? Was the kind of loopholes, Is it outdated? Is something formed years ago that doesn't apply anymore? Was it unfair in the first place? You didn't know all the details. You can find reasons why you can break it. It's always good to do that first. So when you find any contract you formed in the past, and we can call this karma, balance sheet, can be any contract. It is karma because it's affecting you. You formed agreement with somebody and it's still alive. And even if you've forgotten it, it's still affecting how you behave, your power flow between you and that person, the control you're under, and so on. So often breaking that contract frees you. It helps you cut the cord to that person. Sometimes you find you're trying to cut the emotional cords to people and not quite going because there's a contract still under there. Breaking the
Well,
contract will free you.
why would you need to negotiate? Because if everything is our choice and if everything is our creation and I choose not to have it anymore, why do I need to negotiate with that person?
Choice is a deep thing. As I've spoken before, how we have the different dimensions of choice, and it's like it's not that simple as just making a choice. Because choices, first of all, are made emotionally. A new choice will supersede the old one if made in the same emotional depth. That's the thing. If you're not the same emotion, it's not going to quite hold. Secondly, we do live in this world where we have reasons for everything because we live in this world of laws where you form a contract and it's binding. That's what we've learnt. This is conditioning as well. We believe because you made a contract, it's now binding. That's why we've got to convince ourselves otherwise. There are spells to it, like the dragon spell of releasing karma. That'll just dissolve instantly. I mentioned that.
And the
Otherwise,
dark elves, right? You've worked
I
with the
do.
dark elves, yeah.
I do. We can go into that, into the dark elf world, but again, that takes a little more time. The dragon spell is very quick. Otherwise, it's a case of actually looking at it and realizing this isn't fair. In legal terms, it's outdated. It wasn't fair in the first place. We didn't have all the facts. So you can look at reasons why it can be broken. Then you could just, like, it's good to do it in three ways because of the three effects of the unconscious. Right, void, tear it up, burn the pieces. And then you can cut the cords to the person.
Super. About karma, there are things in our lives that we can change and others we cannot. So how can we change or not our fate? That is the ultimate question.
Okay, I'm going to talk about this because there isn't really anything we can't change because it's all our creation. Something is just much harder and it takes a much deeper level of choice. See, what we call fate or destiny is what has become predetermined inevitable. That's how deeper choices have become predetermined inevitable. If we go deep enough to change those, a new choice becomes predetermined inevitable. That way we change our fate, our destiny. These are the deep level choices. Nothing is really that fixed. There's just different levels of how fixed they are. How old, how built up in the structure, how deep they were made in the emotions and so on. These affect, on so many different levels. So the choice has different levels. So you've got our one-dimensional, two-dimensional, three-dimensional choices. We have the choice to find the point, choice to find the area, choice to give it depth. When we go into depth, this is where it gets heavier. Those choices reveal deep meaning in our lives, as well as having defining an area and a point and a choice in the past and so on. These things have could actually go very deep. And it is old choices that have become destiny. What we sowed to do long ago that we would never ever change, that kind of, with that such emotion, we'll never change. You fix that. You go into the emotion when you feel you'll never ever change this. You can change it from that point. So you see, all these things are fixed. We fixed them. Destiny, fate, we created them. But they're much, much a deeper level of choice. We have to go very deep to change those.
What is the best way to check what karma you might have when you meet somebody new?
How you feel? What's the reaction? And You're just suspicious when it's too good. You might totally fall in love with somebody and they seem to be your soulmate. Yeah, great. They usually go totally terribly wrong because there's such a strong reaction to lose yourself. You forget you're no longer discriminating. You've kind of totally lost your heart and your emotions are caught there and you're not discriminating. You forget, but you lose your boundaries. And then when it goes wrong, you've lost all your power. And you don't really understand until you start opting to that pain. You start realizing, what is this about? And you go into the pain of it and you realize, yeah, this is an old pattern. I've been here before in other ways. And this is karmic pattern I've got involves giving a power away, losing myself. And you know, things like that. It's like you find old patterns repeating in a very deep way. And sometimes you don't realize it's there until until you've already been hurt. But if you've been hurt before, you should be actually ready to catch it next time before it happens. That's the thing, it would be discriminating. Be suspicious when something is too good and it's gone bad before. This pattern might not have broken. In this simple case I gave of what you might fall in love, for instance, and lose yourself. This is a common problem in many people because early in life we learn that love says yes and will says no. We separate love from will. That's what causes the problem later on. You see, you can be willful until you fall in love, then you lose your boundary and turn to a mush, and they can walk all over you. This basic separation of love and will can be a repeated pattern that gets worse each time. Every time you fall in love, you lose your will. When you're willful, you're not in love. See how it works? Until you can actually reunite the love and will and realize that, you know, love gives depth to the will and will gives direction, difference to the love. They can work together. You have this split. So sometimes, you know, it's like the karmic pattern. You have to look deeply to understand it, what's gone wrong. Takes a lot of, is it, karma really deals with all of life. You could look at the psychology, the choice you make, and the whole of the magic to understand where things go wrong. Karma is simply what's gone wrong, and we have to understand what went wrong. And until we do that, it'll keep happening, because you need to actually change it.
Have you ever read the Agora books by Robert Svoboda? Being an Agora yourself, I'm curious on your view of them since the third one is called The Law of Karma.
Yeah, I know. Again, a lot of people write stuff that's not fully understood. A lot of people actually repeat jargon rather than understand what's really about. Could repeat the same old words without having took those words. Here's where the problem comes in. People are repeating words which are hard to understand, are translated into English, and they keep getting stuck in the same old pattern, and there's something they're missing. Look at the Agora path in general. It doesn't really fit with the normal idea of karma because you do some pretty dark stuff. Not really bad as such, but it's like exploring yourself in very deep ways, going through your boundaries, you know, going through all your resistances to go hit like the center of the consciousness beyond everything. It is deep stuff, and you will face stuff. And in the end, when you go there is no karma, simply because you've gone past every law. There is no past. When you actually go into the deep consciousness, there's no past. Therefore, there's no cause and effect. There's only choice. There's only consciousness, and you're creating it all. You get to a point where there is no karma. Or rather, karma gets to be defined. What proceeds you want to blunt to change the rest of your life is something that's in your control again. So you see that an idea of karma will go deeper and deeper as you go deeper and deeper, what it really means. Quite often people see it as cause and effect, but cause and effect are not real. That's a mechanical view of the universe. It's based on past causality, when actually in magic we know that, and in modern science we know that causes in the future, not the past. Choices and what we're focusing on, intention, are far more important. And our hidden intentions are what shape our reality rather than our past. You know, what we really want inside and what we're covering up, all those things. So it's like the idea of karma changes as a relationship to time and space itself changes. As we change it to deep into more expanded dimensions. By the time you got to the seventh dimension, there is no past, or rather, the past is insignificant. It doesn't matter. There's many possible paths, pasts, and they don't affect your reality anymore. There's only choice. So beyond the seventh dimension, it's like this whole past idea of past karma is no longer relevant. However, you're still in this kind of future karma that teaches you something now, creating a future. The Agami karma, as I've called it. So we have to be aware that it is about planting seeds and gradually getting more and more control. Path to Agori is a very deep one. When you kind of blend with Kali and go past all your resistances into that pure awareness, you actually overcome everything. You have more control in the end, but it's like you also have less attachment. There's less you need to do. The experience one was Kali, nothing else matters, but you can change anything. They're good books, but as I said, the last one on Karma, it takes a lot more understanding to actually get to what it's really about. It takes time.
Could you please talk more about soulmates? Is it possible to have one without karma creation?
Everything's possible, but let's look what really happens. We all come from one. It's not as if we're born in pairs. That's not real. However, there are certain people in the past you've had a very strong connection with, much deeper spiritual link. Therefore, you feel a very, very strong connection. It might not just be one. Problem is, when people look for a soulmate, if that doesn't work, they're totally screwed. They're waiting for the one that's going to work. If it doesn't work, then what?
Turn off
Trouble is they're not taking
the TV.
responsibility for it.
Do anything.
Just because this person has a
Turn off
deep
the light.
connection with doesn't mean that's going to work. You've got to make it work. You're still going to play all the usual rules of responsibility with it within a relationship, not taking for granted and communicating all those other things. Otherwise, you can make it fail. Doesn't matter how good it was to start with. So the whole idea of looking for soulmate is often a lack of responsibility. You can choose to form a deep connection and make it work, if both of you are choosing that. Or you can actually find one who's a very strong connection at first, and it all goes horribly wrong. It's up to you to be responsible for it. And you can find many people in life, not just the one you feel a very deep connection with. Yet they're never perfect. You might feel a very strong emotional connection somewhere, but something in the outer life isn't fitting. It might be the logistics of it. You live in different parts of the world and can't get there. It might be on the sexual level you don't match, even though you do on a spiritual level. For a relationship to work, several things have to come together. It has to work emotionally, sexually, spiritually, logistically. It's not enough to have a very strong spiritual connection if you can't make the rest work. So you see people fall into traps with the whole idea of a soulmate. Again, karma requires understanding. If you want to actually make things work, you've got to understand the whole picture. What makes it work? When it comes to soulmates, I say do my relationship and love magic course so you understand how relationships work then and how to make them work. There's magic in that, but it's like, you can't just wait for the universe to provide you the right person, everything will be okay. Life is never like that.
Somebody is explaining that they've had problems with men throughout their life, not necessarily romantically, but there's a lot of projection and it doesn't belong to me. It's wrong. They have an agenda. There's sexual harassment, misogyny, lies, attempts to control me, etc. I've put up boundaries with most people. Where does this originate from?
Well, that can be many possibilities. Have a look. What are you talking about here?
This is Sarah.
Yeah, okay. So this, it's deeper than that because you've got this a karma of super of some serious abuse within the family. It is ancestral. On both sides, you've got men who are dominating and abusive, and women who then became passive. With the two are both there in the ancestry, it kind of strengthens that pattern because as a woman, you've got the feminine side saying be weak, and all that always the men are dominating and controlling and abusive and dumping the shame and all those things. So this is an ancestral pattern. So one has to kind of clear all the layers of ancestry for this one, both sides of the family, because it's in both sides. So this and see, these things affect you. You're born with these patterns from the ancestors in your genes, and they all have their memory. It's telling you that women are weak and men abuse them. So that's the kind of pattern you actually, the blueprint you're building around. This is like the structure you've come in with that you'd think this is how life works. Therefore, you always create around that structure. The underlying belief has to go. And do that, you've got to release the emotion. The emotional dances are in there of both the abusive men and the abused women. As a woman, you'll feel the kind of abused side, the victim side. It's important that you go through that and release it. But also, we do the shadow work. You realize that the abusive man is in there as well. Hasn't been expressed because you can't when you're the victim, but it's in there. You might feel that in the hostility we'd like to abuse, but you haven't been able to because you're not strong enough. And quite often, this is an underlying current that's not being expressed. So it requires both ancestral work and shadow work. Look at the ancestors, then put them in the shadow journey, realize that both the women and the men are all parts of shadow. When you make an alliance with the shadow and peel that, you kind of own all the power and change the whole pattern. So you both have a kind of power. Victims are also very manipulative. In a relationship between the bully and the victim, it's usually the victim who's really in control. See, a victim could be a victim to anybody. A bully can't, so they need a victim to be a bully too, not be able to put up the bullying. A victim actually has more control, and they usually follow living in a certain agenda there. trying to prove something, trying to prove again and again that the men are bad. Keep making it happen and keep being the victim, so they keep proving that this man is bad, and maybe you should look at this, and it's a way of subtle, silent punishment. Then there's abusive man. What's in there? What's he really feeling? Why did he abuse a woman? There's a weakness in there. The feeling of having to be right, a kind of entitlement, better than the other one. There's an ego thing. They feel insecure in themselves. They feel not good enough, and therefore have to try and prove themselves better than somebody else. What we call in psychology, competitive value. You make yourself feel better, put the other people down. So this kind of shame, unworthiness patterns going on there, coming as a bully, and then on the female side, you've got the manipulated side too. You have to actually look at both. Both men and women have different strengths. We own those and take the raw power of it. You change how you use it. The victim has a strength. It's the clever manipulation. The bully has a strength, which is the force. Put those together, and you can control everything. It's a case of using things right, you see, owning those powers. That totally changes how you actually direct this current in your life. You own the ancestry by doing the shadow work.
This kind of goes on from my question, because one of the other things that you've put in your article is one of the ways to deal with the karma is ancestral line healing. So what you've just said to Sarah is to do the shadow work and obviously to welcome the emotions. Is that the same for every ancestral karmic issue that
Not
you would
always.
find?
I was just picking up this one, that the shadow is something important, because you've got this kind of two sides of the family which both are in there unconsciously, and in order to actually understand them, she's gonna have to brace both sides. You have to do an ancestral healing, but I think in this case you need shadow work too, to finally bring those two together and take the power of them.
So for anyone else who identifies an ancestral issue, then it might be working with Gedi, or it might be point
All that thing,
holding.
all those things, yep.
Okay, thank you. Another question with regards to ancestral families. How do you clear ancestral family karma when you are the black sheep and the outcast?
Go into the identity. Remember, identity is also creation. It's not who you really are. And that's where we practice the grokking. We know that stepping in and out of identity is just a step, like you step in and out of anything. You know, it's not who you are. It's a present creation. So you look at, you go into the identity and step out of it again. And then when you step in and out, you can actually begin to recognize the emotions that hold it together. Why do you want to be the black sheep? What's the identity holding together, which enables everybody to dump on you because you're holding that identity? So you have to have a certain energy for people to choose who's the black sheep and dump on you. You're already holding the identity of black sheep. And basically, it's carrying their shame. You hold your shame, therefore you hold theirs as well, because you're better at it than they are. This is how often shadow works. You get some, if you can't deal with something, you have somebody close to you who can hold that for you. So what's happening in a family where nobody's dealing with the shame? You can handle shame, so they'll put it on you and you feel all their shame. That sucks a bit, doesn't it? But you can remember to give it all back. That's the first step. It's like, okay, I'm not doing this anymore. I'll handle my shame, not yours. Begin to feel it was the shame that I'm bringing you. Give it all back. Don't take it anymore. And then you can actually release the identity of black sheep. The point we decided you're good at shame, therefore you can carry other people's as well. And we look through your childhood, there are times you realize, okay, I can take this on because it doesn't bother me. But then at this point where it does bother you, that's a problem. You don't mind people dumping on you because it's not really bothering you at the time, but it then becomes a habit. The times you're good at carrying stuff and it doesn't really bother you, somebody's saying you blame, I don't care. Then later on, it builds up. But there's usually some choice earlier on where you've actually allowed this to happen. You decided you can actually carry other people's shame. So you change that choice. Change the choice, give them the shame back, say no, tell them you're dealing with your shame, they always have to deal with their own, you're not doing it for them. They can follow your example, but you're not going to do it for them.
If somebody has a vow of poverty and suffering, how do they end that?
Again, it's changing the vow. Remember, we made a vow. It's like a choice. You go back, just like the contract, you tear it up and burn it and all those things. But you might have to go into the emotion and realize this is wrong. If you made this choice and it's like, remember, this is a bad choice. It's outdated. It wasn't unfair and all those things. I was given the wrong information. Therefore, it can be now be undone. It can be voided. Same with the contract, you tear up and burn it, release that vow. And again, use the dragon spell. Very good for releasing all these old karma ties, all the old patterns of choices and beliefs you're carrying, all the contracts you carry.
How is the karma of parents or families changed for the better if they are not interested in working but disturbing rather, well, rather than being disturbing to everybody?
What I find is that they're going to have to deal with theirs at some point. The quicker you give it back, the quicker they change. So when you're in a position where the family's dumping shame on you, your job is actually to give it back so they face it. So I'm stepping on you, they're not feeling it. It's why they dump it on you. They don't want to feel their shame, so that you feel it instead. This is the whole reason people pass shame on. This is the whole reason behind abusive behaviour. So of making people feel the shame that they don't want to feel. If you realize, no, their lesson in this life is to learn to face their own shame, you give it back. Some people feel bad about giving it back. They don't want their parents to feel shame. Well, why not? It's theirs. They won't heal until they feel it. When they realize they made a mistake, the shame can be turned to remorse and be forgiven. Until they recognize they're doing it and owning it, they won't change, they won't heal, they won't grow. It only becomes positive when you give them their shame back. That's actually important. This is a positive thing. A lot of people are afraid to do it. They think it's somehow some kind of revenge or something that isn't. I've known people to give the shame back to the parents, and suddenly the parents change and start going through therapy and deal with the problems because now they realize the shame was there and they did something about it. It's often a positive starting point for them. So give the shame back.
This is a multi-part question. Yogananda wrote the Kriya Yoga that every time you do it, it releases a certain amount of karma, and that evolution takes a million rotations around the sun. First question: I assume the Chandali Level 8 practice does the same and releases a certain amount of karma every time we do it. Is that correct?
It is true, but you have to go with the process by understanding it. So even doing the breathing, the Kriya Yoga, it's because you're relaxing and letting go. That in any meditation, those old thoughts and stresses come up, don't they? We've spoken about this before. Someone's trying to meditate, and all this crap's coming up, and that's all part of the release. As you relax, stuff comes up to release. So in the way, you have to be conscious of releasing karma. As you release old thoughts and emotions and tensions and things and old choices and things that bother you before, so you don't bother you anymore because you released that tension. This can happen during breathing, can happen during Chandali, but you're usually aware of something shifting. It's not enough just to focus on the breath without allowing the consciousness to change. So don't fight the stuff that comes up. If you're breathing and start feeling all these old memories, let it come out. If you're doing a Chandali and all these old pains and anguishes and memories and traumas come out, let it come out. That is how karma is released. Releasing the memories, releasing the emotions, releasing the old choices. The breathing and the Chandali are all kind of triggers. But releasing karma is a conscious process.
And do you have a single empowerment that directly multiplies the actual practice of Chandali Level 8 and to make it even more powerful?
Only the general upgrades, so the 8 is the highest level, but then it's like we have other levels like linked to the different deities like Shiva and Kali, which we call transformation, Rudra particular with fiery transformation. So the upgrades we do along the way, some people signed up for regular upgrades, they actually will speed a bit more.
Yes, I'll
But
pop the link.
really understanding the process is to actually be good at actually welcoming stuff. It's not enough to actually keep going to raise the Kundalini if you don't actually know how to welcome the emotion. If you want to push them away, you're not letting it happen. What really speeds up is how well you welcome the each emotion. Not judging it, not wanting to go away, just realize it's not me, it's just an emotion. I will feel it, welcome it, and it'll pass. The better you are at that, the quicker you release karma.
For those of you that aren't aware, Peter, on a monthly basis, will provide Tanaka Dalam and Chandali upgrades for a contribution. So I'll pop that link in the chat very shortly. So if anybody would like to receive those upgrades on a monthly basis, then they can join that. The next part of the question, then, please, Peter, which multiple attunement package would complement Chandali 8 practice? Is it the Tantra or Dragon Ascension System, Kali, Shiva package?
All of them. You see, the tantric one, yes, that's good. There's all the Amavidya attunements and Chandali. They're getting all Chandali upgrades anyway. All these are Chandali upgrades. There's a Kali one, Shiva, these all Chandali upgrades, but particular forms. So, all very good to actually speeding up the whole process of actually purification, which is actually raising Kundalini, releasing all the weaknesses, building power. So, yeah, they all help. Dragon Ascension system is more complete in a way because it's something you can keep doing again and again to go deeper each time. It teaches you how to use the runes and the dragon runes, all these things to actually and activate the different channels to actually really move all your blockages with understanding. That's a system you actually work with forever. And each time you do it, you go further. It never stops. So say, yeah, the Dragon Ascension package is the most, probably the most powerful, the most complete. But again, it all depends on your path in life, where you choose what you're drawn to. A lot of people are drawn to the Yoga system more. I like kind of working with the Mahavidyas and those tantric energies. Some people like dragons better. So you go where your heart is calling you, because you know what you're suited to, what suits you best, you feel drawn to, you resonate with it.
I've just popped that link in the chat there for anyone who is interested in the ongoing Tanagadalam and Chandali upgrades. And then the next question is there a connection between karma and transgender issues?
I'd say that probably that's in the last stage of what we call the Legami Karma. They're creating it right now. They're messing around a lot, and it's like, and see, not everything is about the past, it's about choices, exploring new choices and thinking, and often these choices are not thought through. That's where it goes wrong. We do lots of things that we'd never really thought through carefully, and we end up with the consequences of them. A lot of these trans issues are kind of playing with new rules and changing things, but it's not done very cleverly. It's going to be creating plenty of karma. You know, first of all, you got those who are actually having operations and find they've been traumatized and it's too late to change it and they've been messed up and become suicidal. Huge amount of damage being done there. A lot of these issues, it's like a lot of people, if they start too young, they haven't even found their sexuality yet. They don't know what it's about. They're exploring. And it's like they need time to explore before they actually make any fixed decisions. It's no good actually deciding I want to be something else now and change your gender through an operation and then it's too late to do anything about it later. They were exploring, it wasn't meant to be fixed yet. So you see a lot of damage is being done here, all out of money. Of course, you get money out of your operations. As well, that's the main motivation when you look at it. Whole system, particularly the medical system, is about making money, trying to push operations, push drugs, vaccines, whatever. So it's more money. And they don't care what damage they're doing, so long as you're getting the money. So this is creating karma. First person, mainly for the person who's accepted it, because it's, you're allowing something to damage yourself, stepping out of the natural process or the natural timing by which you grow. You know, until you reach puberty, you don't know much about sexuality yet. You're still finding your identity. This happens all through our teenage times. You're finding ourselves, finding our identity, and finding our worth, and so on. We should be allowed to explore before things are put in us and say, this is right, and this is right, and this is wrong, we must do this. And it's not just the transgender issue, it's happened so many ways. At school, you pushed all these rules upon you when you want to be rebellious and find different ways of crushing that rebellion. Well, the rebellion is natural too because you're finding your own will separate from the other wills, which are telling you how to think. We need that. If that's crushed, you lose something of your soul. And it gets clever in the way they crush you. It used to be a simple fight of wills. You know, you're struggling with your parents, struggling with the teachers, and you maintain your will. Now, suddenly a subtle game is coming. I'm trying to medicate you for being wrong and all this rubbish like that. It's taking your will away and therefore taking a piece of your soul away. This is all very bad karma. So there's so many things happening in life to take your power away. And that's the important thing to realize. People are trying to take your power away. You have to guard it and take it back. That's why the first course I put out for you is to take back your power. A lot of people need that one.
Could you please explain exactly what ADHD is? Someone has heard that it's something to do with the weaker third chakra.
It is not through the solar plexus, yes. Because it comes basically as we normally grow in our will, we learn a certain amount of discipline, we learn to focus our thinking, and we learn to actually have emotional directions that are healthy. When the system gets unnatural, people not being nourished emotionally, but made to actually work hard and follow certain thought patterns, not think for themselves, it cracks. It can't maintain its normal function. The solar plexus is all about a will, about a focus, harnessing focus and directing energy. Which requires both thought and emotion. It requires healthy emotions, healthy interactions with others, how to have interactive emotion, connecting. When relationships are messed up, like this transgender issue is not a particular example, not allowed to actually explore relationships naturally and find out what's you and expand rather than people trying to push things onto you too fast. Told how to think, all these extra stresses come in or pressures put in you, like you go to school, for instance, you have 11 plus exam, but you're still actually just reaching puberty and developing emotionally, and that's why you've got these responsibilities to pass this exam. That's already creating a stress because it's like you're not allowed to develop naturally in your own time, not finding the balance of emotion and thought and will. Especially at a time you're becoming rebellious, you want to find your own will, and then they're trying to tell you something else. There's so many conflicts with splitting the solar plexus that it's hard to maintain your focus of thought and emotion. So it is all about the solar plexus cracking under this strain of these unnatural pressures.
Is it possible for someone to use marijuana yet still have their energy protected? Somebody has a family member who is around a lot and uses it medicinally.
But even with anything medicinally, you've got to look at whether it's actually suppressing something. Because if you keep taking it, it means you haven't dealt with the underlying issue that you're suppressing with it. This is true of all medicines. When things like ayahuasca are supposed to push you through it. If you're addicted to it, then it's not working properly. It's not how it's supposed to be. It's supposed to actually bring out the pattern and clear it. If you use it to cover up a pain, you're stuck in a suppressive and addictive cycle. That's the important thing. What does the harm isn't just as much the marijuana. Because you can actually do it with your own endorphins. We produce endorphins much stronger than marijuana when you want to suppress something. So it's not really about what you take, it's about whether you're willing to face your emotions. This is a big one we have to keep coming back to. If you suppress your feelings, you're going to have problems. That's the real problem. That creates the addictions.
I feel that there is a heavy karmic ancestral burden associated with my health conditions as well, often overwhelming hunger and intestinal digestive difficulties. Can I still clear all ancestral karma, primarily Jewish suffering, whilst I don't yet have the strength to feed my new ancestral lineage of Javanese masters that is just chosen to take on?
Okay, now don't worry about feeding physically. This is another fixed way. Remember, the important thing of all of this is consciousness. You start with your feeling. And this is another trap you'd be careful of. All the rituals can take too much attention. You don't have a chance to feel. Sometimes too much ritual is not dealing with your feelings because you're covering up by doing all the outer things. There might be a fear underneath, a panic, feeling being too weak. These are all feelings. Feel too weak. Feel the pressure of your ancestors pressing you away as you make you do something else and you don't like it, you feel overwhelmed. All these feelings have to come out. If you haven't got the energy to actually feed your ancestors, that's okay too. Feel that. Go to the emotions about that you're doing something wrong, you're not going to be supported because you're not feeding them. You can look at various kind of beliefs coming up here. A belief that your parents or your ancestors won't look after you because you're not doing your bit. This shouldn't be. But often it is. With a child, it's supposed to be a up conditionally. Don't sound say, I'm not going to love you until you actually do all this for me. That's very bad. That's kind of just not natural. And it's dumping shame and putting control already. And one has to look at these feelings, these the beliefs that you got around this. So you go into the feeling, basically, of how it feels not to be able to feed your ancestors, that you won't have the support, so you feel too weak, and nobody's going to look after you. Look at that. This is all childhood patterns, being afraid of not being looked after. And you're still carrying the body now because you still hold that pattern from childhood, feeling too weak, feeling helpless because people are not looking after you and thinking you've got to earn their love in some way. These are all conditions that have been brought up in childhood. So, in your process, go through those and discreate them. You can do those without moving. If you're lying there helpless, go into the helplessness, go into the memories of it, welcome it, let it go. Release those old beliefs and thoughts. Just keep going through it emotionally, keep releasing. Remember to welcome everything and then release it. Welcome every feeling. That's where you start. Be aware how other things can actually distract you from that. Sometimes when you have to not be able to do anything, it's because it's time to feel now. There's no distraction. You haven't got time for distractions. You haven't got energy for distractions. You've got to just be there and feel it. It's a very transformative time when you look at it, because now you've got to deal with it. There's nothing else you can do. So take the time, realize I'm just going to lie here and feel now. Welcome every feeling. Go through all the layers of all the pains, the fears, the shame, whatever. The helplessness, the powerlessness. Keep welcoming and releasing it. This is all past conditioning. And as you do that, Kundalini will rise. This is what Kundalini work is for. When you start activating Kundalini, it helps push the emotions out. So be aware of that process. So you need to release emotions. That'll help the Kundalini to flow. When it really flows, as you release emotions, Kundalini burns and regenerates the body.
So you were talking about when somebody is meditating and thoughts, emotions come up and they need to release them. If somebody is reciting a mantra, do you have any tips on how they can recite the mantra whilst at the same time welcome emotions and release them?
At some point, the mantra becomes automatic if you've done it so many times. And I always suggest people take time to quiet the mind before starting the mantra. The way to do it is like you close your eyes for a couple of minutes and just find the quietness. You notice in that quietness, thoughts arise for you naturally and spontaneously and easily. It's just as easily and quietly you start reciting the mantra, like a very quiet thought. That way, it's quieting the mind. But in a while, that mantra becomes automatic. So we've repeated the mantra. Stuff's still coming up. You've recited the mantra while going through all this stuff. It comes automatic after a while. Because then, you've done the mantra so many times, it is automatic, and that's how it should become. That's why it's good to have one mantra that suits you. You have your guru mantra, your main deity that you always do all your life. You might do other sadhanas in between, but there's always some mantra you come back to. You've done so many times, it's automatic, you have to think about it. When you start doing it quietly, the mind quietens. You start getting deep into yourself, everything comes up, and you release it while reciting mantra. Mantra actually makes it easier because you're observing now. You feel all the emotions without being identified. The mantra somehow helps the process because in the mantra you're being pure awareness. From that point, you're able to observe all these emotions and let them go. Rather than being identified, where you get caught up in them, can't move.
I remember when I was doing my yoga training, we would be doing a particular dance, not like a vigorous dance, a very slow dance. Plus, we would be reciting a mantra. Plus, we would be counting repetitions. And I still had the capacity to think.
That's it.
The
You don't
idea
need.
of this yoga practice was you're
Yeah.
doing these three things, it's meant to quieten the mind. And I was like, nope.
Of course, it doesn't. We're missing the point. Just the mantra alone will do it. You don't need to overdo it. That's kind of missing the point.
Yeah,
If you do
it's
the
always
mantra,
funny.
the thing is, mind can be quiet even though you're thinking. This is what I noticed in Spiersbo when I was first doing TM, and they used to put things on people's heads to measure the brain waves while they're meditating, trying to get some kind of data on it and so on. And I said this story before, and somebody might have heard it, that one woman came in one day and said, "Don't use my results. I just couldn't meditate today. I don't know what's wrong. My mind is all over the place." And I said, "That's funny. You're about to leave yours the deepest state ever recorded. So when you're going deep, all the garbage is coming up. That's how it works. Doesn't mean you're not meditating." So she was actually really deep while she was going through these thoughts. So it's okay. Because you're not, you don't seem quiet. It's like, yes, you are quiet, but you're observing all these thoughts, all the stuff coming up. That is the process. It's okay.
Lots of garbage then. And
Yeah, it's
it
fine.
also.
Observe it. It passes eventually whenever you let it out. If you resist it, you don't let it out. It stays.
It also really matters what you've ingested.
That affects it too.
Yes,
That's
like
why they
what?
have special diets in yoga and the
Yeah.
sattvic diet and don't eat too much before meditating, don't be full and all those things,
Yeah.
fasting and all those things.
Yeah. And you were talking about quieting the mind before going into the mantra. There's three steps to becoming meditative, right? And a lot of what people skip or don't realize they need to do is they need to dissipate the kept up energy before they can actually then sit down and actually get into a meditative
Yeah.
state.
And it takes 2 minutes. Sit down and just be quiet for 2 minutes. And you'll notice in that, yes, the mind is getting quiet, but these thoughts are rising. And the mantra becomes as natural as those thoughts are arising, just quiet and spontaneous. And that's how that should be practiced. If one day it's not as quiet, another day, that's okay. You're still meditating, you're still going through a process, you're still releasing. Go actually going deeper and releasing all the stuff that's stored up in there.
And if you're anything like me, you can be reciting a mantra, having a conversation, counting, and probably writing a book at
Yeah, while riding your
the
bike and all that,
same time.
doing Muay Thai and
Don't laugh because that's actually when I do a lot of my main work is when I'm driving. All right, next question then. What about autism and sensory processing disorder?
Well, autism is one big one because I have worked on this before when there was big entities involved. I haven't done many cases. Not people become the autistic built. People to be worked on, but it has happened. It was actually when I was with John Ray back on Maui doing the point holding. We had an autistic girl, 9 years old. There were four men working on her. When the demon came, it was so strong, it was throwing these four men into the air. She released this big demon, very much like the Exorcist stuff, all the slime and the head turning and everything going on. When the demon was gone, she wasn't autistic anymore. She was normal. She changed. So in that case, yeah, there's some major cyber soul stuff going on with the demons releasing and big holes in your soul loss, all that kind of stuff. So it is a deep thing which can be healed.
Okay, I'm sure there will be some more questions come.
But the
Oh, yep.
processing bit is another thing. Remember, you're looking at certain parts of the brain, nerves. It's about nerves again. And interestingly, we look at the iris, it's like then we see certain links and reflexes between the pineal glands and what they call the inherent mental part and the speech center. It's all linked. It often centers around the pineal gland where the kind of enthusiasm comes from, where that's been damped. This is the first part that starts affecting the thought processing. So you can see it in the brain how these things connect, and when you look in the iris, that you actually heal those brain circuits to actually be up to the processing channels when you work at pineal points, which is again is releasing the kind of the enthusiasm.
Question from Stefan with regards to the darkness course. In one of the MP3s, you talk about the black flame, that it could be used in martial arts. If you send it to their head, it will disorientate them and
Oh
confuse
yeah.
them. In capital letters, how exactly do we do this if we want to avoid a fight with somebody about to attack without touching them? So do we just envision the black flame hitting their head?
Oh, you send it through the hand. I mean, generally, when you relax, when we do the Breen exercise, you're actually channeling it through the body, and it's a bit like Tai Chi, and that's general movement sending energy out. So I'd move as you put a hand movement to get out of the way where you send energy, and it's like, poof, the mind's gone. They actually suddenly confused, and don't even know what they're doing, forgot they were attacking you.
Is that
Because
what you do to all
again,
the trainers in Muay Thai?
no, this is just much smaller areas. It's like I'm not so much using void at that point, I'm particularly using chi. I'll move with energy. Rather than use force, I save my energy. I mean, I'm getting older, come on, not as strong as when I was young. But then it's interesting how Non pointed out that he was trying to figure out what I was doing. He said, you're using energy, you don't have to use strength. Because when I actually use the chi, it moves them. You move the soul, the body has to follow, and they get sent flying without any force. So I can be more relaxed that way. I don't have to use force, so I can preserve energy. So that's just pure chi rather than void. If you use void, the mind goes. They totally forget where they were, and they're confused and might fall over, even and, like they're falling into a big hole. Haven't been doing that, no. I used to do that in ninjutsu, that was different.
Going back to the mantras, reciting mantras in a hurry but keeping a discipline every day, is this good along with the daily stuff? Along the day, stuff is released in the morning.
When you're doing a sadhana, sometimes you have to do a lot while driving and stuff like that because you're trying to fit a lot in. You should always try and do some in meditation, even if it's like 10 minutes, have a quiet time when it's going deeper. But the idea of a sadhana is to actually have the repetitions because you're building nerve pathways in the brain. Repetition memory builds neural pathway. The Sanskrit letters seem to fit with neural pathways in the brain. When you're actually speaking them, you're building them up. Remember, repetition builds new nerve pathways. So having done 125,000 mantras has built it into the brain. So the actual sadhana is simply repetition to actually build that. However, to benefit from it, you have to meditate. So say, yeah, in a sadhana, yeah, do them all day, driving, whatever you're doing, but find some time to meditate. At least 10, 15 minutes or so, just quietly meditation to the mantra, even if you're doing the rest while driving around.
Could you please talk about how you might be able to help somebody with dementia and memory loss?
That's a lot to do with actually oxygen starvation to the brain, have to open up circulation, and quite often it's to the tension of the neck, to working point, working the neck points called the meridian where the tension is stored, the oxygen capacity of the lung and how you absorb it. So it's a case of working on certain meridians and points and things can do it. And diet. Remember, lots of what is because what's happening in the veins, the main capillaries in the brain are calcifying, so they're a bit more restricted, so you haven't got such a nerve supply. Calcification comes from things like it's like what they call the plaque built up through layers of cholesterol and calcium, the process of monoclonal proliferation, and that's usually due to free radicals in the body when the fats are oxidizing because you haven't got the antioxidants. So it's all these imbalances of the diet, you see. So less fats without antioxidants. So don't have all the oils unless you've got the pure plant material where you have plenty of antioxidants, lots of raw food, juices, and things like that. So diet can make a huge difference. But then also the point holding to actually unblock all that.
Multiple overlapping autoimmune issues, for example, Hashimoto and thyroid. I feel exhausted, my hair is falling out, weight up and down. What is the best direction to go, or what suggestions do you have? I'm so tired of Dr. Merry-go-rounds. Is this karmic or beliefs? They feel very, very drained.
Well, everything is karmic when you look at it because it's about storing emotions again. But in this case, thyroid stores anger. And quite often you're rushing around, you don't have a chance to assert yourself, and therefore not feel your anger. You're just trying to make everything work. And quite often we're giving our power to the system this way. You're not in your own power because you have to have to do something like running around like a hamster in a wheel, and never finding your own will. So you really got to actually get into your feeling. When you're point holding or you're working the thyroid, they'll get the anger out. And also the power losses behind it. You might have similar memories of all the times you've given your power away. When you couldn't express your anger, and eventually the anger comes out, you assert yourself. you change your life at that, from that point on. You don't take that kind of crap from anybody. Quite often we get stuck in routines that don't suit us because that's what we have to do to survive. We don't see the alternative anymore. We don't see that we can build our own dreams. We've forgotten our dreams. So if you're talking about lack of energy, it's because you lack motivation because you've lost your dream. Expectation is low. No longer focused on your desire, you're just stuck in something. So when you actually start working the thyroid gland, you can go through those old power losses, take all your power back and release the anger. You begin to feel your own will again, and you have to come back to your dreams. Come back to what you want to create. Sometimes this also requires a soul retrieval from the adolescent part of yourself. See, as I pointed out before, at adolescence, you normally become rebellious because you find your own will. If that rebellion was crushed, you got tricked out of it and medicated, whatever, a piece of the soul doesn't come in. Therefore, you don't have that fire. You don't have the will. Now, when that adolescent part is there, you don't care what people think. You don't even care about your future yet because you can explore as you go along. You don't care if something doesn't work now because you do something else later. And so that should be. There's not security minded anymore. See, when you're in the solar plexus level, you can be security minded. That's from the thymus as well, which is where the fear is stored. Once you get up to thyroid level, it's power driven. You do exactly what you want, whatever anybody says. You don't care of the consequences because you'll deal with those later. When you've got power, you will deal with them. You'll change your life again. You'll take control of your life. That's how it works. You might have to retrieve the missing adolescent soul, but you're going to have to go into your anger and take your power back.
You were talking about the black flame previously. What part in creation and discreation of the universe does the black flame have, and how is it different from the fire flame of Kundalini?
It is a deeper part, what we call the black Shekinah. You see, when we see light, it's not the deepest because the void creates everything. It's a deeper level of creation. When you go into pure void energy, beyond all form, beyond all light, beyond all everything, it's only pure awareness, so we're more into void energy. Black flame comes from that. It dissolves everything but that. If everything that's not really you is going to be dissolved by it. It's why it's so deep and people get scary, because it's like Kali's energy. She takes away everything that's false. It brings you back to your real self, which is pure awareness. All identities, everything can go. Because you might have a structure built on light, good ideas of this and nice and love and all these things, but actually the pure awareness underneath is just pure awareness. There is no light, it's just void. When you exist in that, and there's no fear, because from that point you can create anything. From that point you can discreate anything. When you're looking at the black flame energy, in particular with Kali, we're looking at discreation. We need to let go of absolutely anything, just to be pure awareness. Nothing else touches you. If you let go of all the different identities you hold on to, you can discreate anything, because they're all manifest to you. It's about being pure awareness. That's all there is. There's no identity, there's no image you have to hold on to, nothing trying to prove, just pure awareness. And then everything that you don't want to discreate. Discreating consciousness, it vanishes from the world outside as well. So it's a pure energy of basically pure awareness before anything else is created. But it's what dissolves everything back into that pure awareness. It's the discreation, the unmaking.
So, just a reminder to everybody, I have popped the link to Peter's latest article, his Karma article, in the chat there. And for those of you that want to join the Clip-Off workshop that's happening on the 2nd of August, you can either become a member or you can join the Clip-Off workshop as a one-off. And I've put the links back or both of those in the chat also, and also to Peter's medicine retreat and point holding intensive in September. So, no more questions. I will ask the ones that are in the chat now, and then that is it. So, no more questions. Thank you very much. So, the next question, then, Peter, I mean, how far you want to go into this one, I don't know. Could you please remind people how to discreate?
Okay, it starts by welcoming emotion. Whether the situation, even a memory, whatever it is, you first feel it. Now, obviously, you don't do this while facing a rest in the street, you haven't got time to it then. But when you're at home trying to look at bad in your life, you see how it feels. And rather than resist it, you welcome the feeling. And the more you welcome, the more you expand. You begin to expand to the different layers. Right now, you might be feeling anger. Then, as you see the other bit of the picture, you start to feel frustration, fear, whatever. You start having more memories. The more you welcome and expand, you get to points where you get to see the whole picture. This thought has gone on creating this pattern all my life. When you get to that point, when you got to the edge, you're no longer in it. Somehow you would become dissociated, and rather than being in the emotion, you're observing the whole thing from the outside. At that point, you just say, "I can let this go now." You permit it to dissociate and watch it fade away. You're not forcing it away. You finish with it, therefore it fades away. So you do it by actually going through all the emotion first until those emotions run out. In that process, you're expanding further and further into the pattern. So basically, it starts with welcoming emotion. You welcome, expand, dissociate, discreate.
Could you please expand on your thoughts around why does every religion have such a negative view on man having sex with another man, saying it's bad karma, etc.?
God knows. It wasn't always that way. It's interesting because it's not just that. You see, you find c religions control sexuality in so many ways because it's a strong instinct. If you can control that, you control people totally. It's like even the missionary, you see, it's like the idea of the missionary position. Women had to be underneath. It's like this all putting all kinds of conditioning. You have to do it our way or something's wrong. You become part of an egregore. If your sexuality is controlled by the egregore, everything's controlled. This way, you can have things like circumcision. Now you're part of this egregore. Affecting some of the trauma attached to this part, your sexuality, makes you part of an egregore. So if you're in that religion, you do this, you don't do that. Your sexuality is controlled. Therefore, you're part of the egregore, they've got control over you totally. You obey all their laws. Remember, sexuality is linked to our rebelliousness too, which is why it happens at puberty. When you get to puberty, you get rebellious because that's linked to your individual will. Therefore, you control somebody's sexuality, you control their will, you control everything. So, they make laws. Many religions have different laws. It's like, yes, homosexuality is a big one in many religions, not in all. I found in voodoo, for instance, they didn't care what sex you are because it's like it's nothing to do with it. It's magic. It doesn't care about what your preferences are. A lot of people came to that simply because no other religion would have them. But you see, it doesn't really matter. It's not because it's a religion for gays, it's because it's like it doesn't matter. They don't care. They see so you can do it there, it's fine. But so many religions can control you through sexuality. And you find certain types of magic, there's different magic of homosexuals because the chemistry, the energy flow is different polarity, and there's a different way of using it. They have their own sex magic, which is different. Everything's possible, but it's like religions control. We look at any religion, it's a combination of spirituality and politics. And these two don't really go together. Because spirituality is to liberate, politics is to control. You kind of have a constant conflict here. This way, a lot of it doesn't make sense. You've got to separate the politics from the spirituality in any religion.
Do you have any advice on elevating consciousness and making strides forward in this area very quickly in the areas of your teachings and your courses, daily practice and diet, etc.?
Well, that's basically why I did the Ultimate Healing course in the Chandali, quickest way. Because you see, as pointed out, to each level, chakras hold different emotions. We interact about the Kundalini, you move it faster, but then the idea is to go through each emotion. The unconsciousness, the apathy, the grief. As you release those patterns, you clear the chakras and raise in consciousness. Time you got to the enthusiasm, you released all that kind of conditioning, all the kind of beliefs and laws that go with it, all the limitations. When you're enthusiasm and there's no more very low emotions left, it's like, yeah, you can do anything. So that's the fastest way. The Ultimate Healing course in the Chandali. Keep
Also, is
working with
there.
that. So you might don't just stop do the course and stop. Keep working with that. When you do your Chandali or anything, point hold, keep welcoming the emotions and discreating.
Is there anything that this person can ingest that allows for better disposition to consciousness enhancement? My consciousness was attacked and stolen and interfered with over a long period of time, and I need to try to work hard to make up for lost time.
There are plants which can help you. Maybe best to take in the flower essences. Yarrow is a good aura strengthener. Mandrake wouldn't take physically, but as a flower essence, or just having the root on you is a very good protector. And there were certain plants of the mugwort family. There was one in the Ethiopia, one of the African plants, simply called the Ethiopian hexbreaker root. It's a form of Artemisia, but this one particular root is protective from all curses. So certain plants do strengthen the aura against any resistance. If you can't get out of the root, I've done the attunement in my Abundia flower essence system, so you can always get the system there and have all the plant spirits with you. Plants are very good for that.
So Yarrow.
Yarrow, mandrake, Ethiopian hexbreaker.
I'm just going to put Hexbreaker. Yeah.
Those are the main ones.
Okay. Thank you. Regarding Chandali and karma clearing, you said that the Dragon Ascension system might be one of the most powerful ones. It has 49 empowerments that we can use on friends and family. So I take it you set up all the orbs that we all the orbs they we don't have to program them to multiply like the automatic Adipra
You can do that,
Parashakti
yes.
orb.
See, when you use them, different people is a little bit different because obviously you're learning the system to actually grow yourself, but you can use them in healing as well, using these different runes and energies on a person to actually heal them with certain qualities. So you can use it that way, yes. Chandali, yeah, you can activate that while holding a person's points or doing healing, and it'll activate energy through them to cleanse them and help release things. So yes, you can use it that way in a person. It's not the same as giving them initiations; they can do it themselves. But you can certainly use it on people.
And Chandali 8, since it is a main practice, can we attach empowerments to that, like the Dragon Sutra?
You can. I mean, generally, I attach everything to the Dragon Sutra anyway, so when you recite the Dragon Sutra, you're activating everything. Makes it easier. Instead of doing Dragon Sutra and everything activates, so you're kind of keeping everything up.
Super, thank you very much. All right, so everybody, please don't miss Peter too much when there's no Q&A next month. You can get to see his face and hear his voice if you join the Clip Off workshop, which is happening on the 2nd of August.
And there'll be a few social media posts where I appear in it briefly.
And don't forget his social media posts. Peter is available on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, and LinkedIn, and anywhere else. So thank you so much, everybody. As always, your questions are what create the call. So I was going, what was I going to say? So, well, oh,
He
hello,
turned up.
Jin. Hello, Jin. He's right on time. He obviously knows it's dinner time.
He's always been on time.
Has Sam been singing in the background whilst you've been
Oh
talking?
no, there's some mantras playing in the background.
Oh, I did wonder because I heard a female singing voice as, every time you were talking. I
No,
thought,
that's recorded stuff going on in the
oh, okay.
background. It's just Jin.
I thought maybe it was like some sirens or something trying to pull me in.
Maybe.
So as I said, nothing until the 2nd of August, Clip Off workshop for magical members. And then after that, Peter and I will see you in September, unless, of course, you want to look at Peter's face on social media. Wonderful. Thank you so much, everybody. Have a wonderful time in between. Enjoy your summer holidays, whatever it is that you might be doing. And the recording will be out in the next couple of days. So if you want to re-listen to today, you are more than welcome. Go beat that karma and enjoy. Take care,
Okay.
everybody. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Bye.
Thank you so
See you
much.
next time.
Bye.